Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube and now also on Bloomberg Quick Take.
We got more Fed talk we want to get to.
Yeah, well, speaking of the Fed, it's not really succeeding when it comes to its dual mandate. Yes, unemployment is low, but inflation remains sky high. That said, its monetary tightening campaign is having a major impact in deflating asset bubbles that just swelled during the pandemic. I mean, we're talking crypto, housing prices, tech stocks, and it's doing so without upending its financial system. Rich Miller writes all about it. He's Bloomberg News economics reporter. He joins us via Zoom from Washington, D.C. Rich, good to have you with us this afternoon. So take us through the metrics that you looked at when you talk about deflating asset bubbles here.
Well, I mean, obviously the one that topic du jour at the moment is crypto, right? And that's depending on how you measure it, it's the market cap of crypto is down about two-thirds from like $3 trillion high not too long ago. If you could look at the FANG stocks, they're down about more than 50%. NASDAQ is down less than that, but NASDAQ as a whole. But if you look at the FANG stocks, they're down by more than 50%. And the house prices, they're just starting to tick over. But, this is the first time they've basically started the decline in 10 years. So all across the board, we're seeing sort of pretty weak asset prices. And if you had, told people, that the Fed was going to raise rates so aggressively a year ago, they would have said, "Oh my God, we're going to see havoc in the financial markets. You're going to see firms going bust. You're going to see bank runs. You're going to see et cetera, et cetera." None of that has happened. The air is coming out of these bubbles, but so far, and that's a big proviso. So far, it hasn't really, shaken the financial system like we saw in the great financial crisis.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, even looking at something like commodities, they're down about 19-20% from their high back in June, and some of that's geopolitical, Rich. But you do wonder, right? Like, it makes you think, might the Fed, FOMC, Jay Powell and company be able to engineer that soft landing?
Yeah, I mean, it increases the chances, right? Obviously, if you really saw havoc in the system, we'd be heading into a recession very clearly and probably a deep one, and the Fed would have to be cutting rates a lot. But so far, they've been able to keep raising rates without sort of causing so much havoc in the financial market that they'll have to stop or retrace. And I've got a quote in there from Jeremy Stein. He's an ex-Fed governor. And, he said, if you had told me a year ago that they were going to be raising this, I'd say, oh, my God, you're going to crack everything up. But so far, we haven't.
Is one of the reasons why this is kind of okay is because it goes to what's referred to as the wealth effect. When people's assets decline, they tend not to spend as much money on large mm-hmm. purchases. But
right,
it's not huge, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the economists say it's, for every dollar fall, it's only like a couple of cents off consumption, basically, right? It might be a little bit.
But does that have an effect to bring down inflation?
Well, that'll be one factor contributing to a slowdown in consumption, and that's what the Fed wants. Consumption to slow, demand to slow, so that's one of the vehicles. But I guess the main vehicles are what you'd say, your higher borrowing costs, right? So housing, buying less, fewer cars, buying fewer durable goods. That would be the main mechanism by which the higher interest rates would slow the economy down. But peripherally, it would also, by knocking asset prices down, it makes people feel less rich. I'm going to save a little more. I'm not going to spend that money, right?
One thing I want to ask you, Rich, and I wonder if we can't rule out some kind of financial blow up, which you point out in your story. Because, one of the things I think about, and this, I'm not saying this is a blow up, but you have Blackstone's behemoth private credit fund, hitting redemption limits for the first time in its 2-year histories, because you had investors pulling out some $50 billion from the corporate lending vehicle.
Right.
Like, I saw that. And we continue to kind of figure out corporate real estate. Like, might it not come back fully post pandemic? And so what happens? So I just wonder, is there something potentially that could still happen?
Yeah. I mean, that fund, the Blackstone fund, has actually been doing pretty well. Mm. So it's not like, people are pulling the money out because they
weren't getting performance.
They're losing money. Either they're pulling out to take profits, or they're pulling it out because they think, maybe next year won't be so good as for commercial real estate as the dividends that they've been getting from that as last year. And, that fund did have, rules saying how much you could redeem, so it's I'm not sure it's a sign of financial cracks are happening. I think it's more idiosyncratic, actually.
There was a caveat in here that you made
a
sure
lot
to say.
A lot of caveats.
As of now.
Times.
When does that caveat, if at all, come true? What do we need to look for to make sure that, it doesn't upend the economy? What's the first sign?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you, and right, I wouldn't be talking to you guys, right? Or I'd be talking to you from a yacht, right?
We would welcome that with great internet connection too, I bet.
As we saw with the UK, where, all of a sudden pension funds of all places, right? We thought, these are supposed to be rock solid. All of a sudden these things can come out of the blue. I mean, the regulators are doing their best to keep an eye on everything, but it's hard beforehand. There's that Buffett saying, right? When the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked, right? When the interest rates go up, you see who's sort of highly leveraged and who's caught with their pants, the proverbial pants down, so to speak.
That's a good
point. So
yeah,
I'm mixing a lot of metaphors here, but anyway, still to be said. But far so good.
All right, Rich, we got to run. Thank you so much. Rich Miller, economics reporter at Bloomberg News, joining us via Zoom from Washington, D.C. Carol Masser, Tim Stenovic, this is Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Since 2019, life expectancy in the United States has declined 2.7 years. It is the largest since World War II, that decline. Black Americans lost 4 years of life expectancy, and Indigenous Americans lost more than 6. And our next guest says we can do a lot better. He writes about it in a recent article for Bloomberg City Lab.
We're very pleased to have back with us Dr. Joshua Sharfstein. He's Vice Dean for the Public Health Practice and Community Engagement and Director of the Bloomberg American Health Initiative. It's at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. It is supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies, also the co-author of The Opioid Epidemic, What Everyone Needs to Know. Dr. Sharfstein this afternoon joins us on the phone from Philadelphia. Dr. Sharfstein, it's always great to get you on the program. Anyone who reads this headline would say, okay, that's just because of COVID. But you actually argue in your piece that life expectancy would have gone down even if we didn't have the excess deaths that were caused by COVID. What's going on?
Well, it turns out life expectancy peaked in the United States in 2014 and has been stagnating and even declining a little bit since then. even before the pandemic. The pandemic, obviously, is the major reason for that shocking decline, which is the largest decline in life expectancy since World War I, over 100 years ago. But it's not the only cause. Another major cause are overdoses. More than 100,000 Americans now dying of fatal overdoses. That's double what it was just a few years ago. And then on top of that, we see significant increases in gun-related suicides and homicides, as well as motor vehicle crashes, which are up like 30% since 2014. So there are multiple causes, but what they do have in common is that they are preventable. A lot of these deaths can be prevented if we take some basic steps, which actually have a lot of support.
And forgive me, you're right. I misread the largest since World War II, that 2.7 years off our life expectancy since 2019. Very, very significant. You know, one of the things that I've done some work on, and recently when the UN was in town in the fall, we did a gathering to talk about non-communicable diseases, you know, so this is something you cover too. And we're talking about things like diabetes, strokes, heart disease. This is really the leading killer in so many different countries. And I feel like we all just kind of, well, yeah, that's a part of life, but it doesn't have to be, does it?
Well, there are absolutely ways to reduce premature death from cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and other non-communicable diseases. In the report, we talk about the value of controlling salt intake. And most of the salt we take in is already in our food. It's not the salt we put on with a salt shaker. And getting the salt down in that food could make a big difference. I think it's estimated saving 50,000 lives a year. That's my understanding. So it's really important not just to think of this as, you know, eat healthy, but how do we get healthy food to ourselves and to other people?
So we've covered food. I want to go to overdoses. You're the co-author of The Opioid Epidemic, What Everyone Needs to Know. We know that over the last few years, opioid overdoses here in the United States have skyrocketed. What is the best way to address this?
So I think you have to start with what we know. And what we know works. And one of the most effective treatments for opioid use disorder are medications like methadone and buprenorphine. They reduce the chance of death from any cause somewhere on the order of 75%.
Are these medications, forgive me, but are these medications that people take if they are unconscious, like in through their nose, or these medications that help?
No, it is not. No. Naloxone is what resuscitates you. But then the problem is if you still have addiction, if you're still addicted, it is quite likely that you will go back to using opioids because that is what your brain is really compelling you to do. So what buprenorphine and methadone do is really address that craving. And people say, aha, I can be myself again. I remember one person who we interviewed, who said, I felt like I was married to heroin until I got on treatment with methadone, and then I could get a divorce. I thought only suicide would be my out. That was the only way to get away. But it really addresses the problem in the brain from addiction, really helps people put their lives back together, and dramatically reduces the risk of overdose death. And unfortunately, fewer than 1 in 5 people with opioid use disorder actually get these medicines. Many places don't offer them. Many emergency departments, despite evidence that starting treatment in the emergency department will double the success of staying in treatment at 1 month, that was a very well-designed randomized controlled trial. Despite that evidence, a lot of places don't offer it. So we say, look, let's make that the standard of care, not just in emergency departments, but also in jails and prisons where people can get started on treatment and not only dramatically reduce the chance they'll die when they leave detention, but also dramatically reduce the chance they'll commit another crime associated very clearly with lower recidivism.
Can we talk about gun shootings and full transparency? We know Michael R. Bloomberg, very dominant when it comes to gun violence prevention, and he established Every Town for Gun Safety, the largest advocacy group back in 2014, and has donated money to it. Of course, Michael Bloomberg, the founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. But gun shootings, it's kind of almost sad that, I don't know that we're getting used to it, but it just feels like gun shootings are very, very commonplace in the United States. That's another big reason why life expectancy has gone down.
That's right. 47,000 gun-related suicides and homicides. They are preventable, and there are particular policies that really do work. And some of them have been adopted by states across the political spectrum. I remember after the Parkland shooting, there was a lot of cynicism. People said, well, we've seen this movie before. Nothing's going to change. But those young people got involved, and before you know it, a very red state, Florida, passed a law called Extreme Risk Protection Orders, basically making it possible for people to temporarily lose access to their guns if they're behaving dangerously and are a risk to themselves or others. And that was passed in Florida, and those laws indicates for every, the evidence so far, for every 10 to 20 of those orders issued and temporary removals of guns happening, a suicide is prevented. And there are many examples of people who were potentially going to kill someone else or even mass shootings who this was a tool that kept everybody safe. Those laws are in 19 states in the District of Columbia now. Our report says let's put them everywhere. And in fact, Congress, in its incredible, you know, gun legislation, I say incredible because people didn't think anything would pass, actually provided money to help implement these laws. And good implementation of these laws, where people know how to use them, really matters in preventing those suicides and homicides. The other policy that we write about has a lot of evidence behind that, and that's requiring a permit to get a firearm. It's called permit to purchase, and those laws are associated with fewer suicides, fewer homicides, and fewer mass shootings.
What about when it comes to policies around driving? Because motor vehicle deaths are another reason why we see a decline in life expectancy. You argue that these are preventable. How do cities and states prevent these?
Yeah, they really are preventable, and there are different kinds of strategies. One of them that we mention in the report is additional technology to keep people who are inebriated from driving. You know, reducing drunk driving is really important because it's responsible for so many deaths on the road. And right now there is work to create new technology in cars that keeps people from driving who are drunk. And if people can roll up their sleeves and get that technology to work, that could be very impactful. The other kind of solution we talk about is redesign, looking for where those crashes are happening. You know, when you see multiple little memorials on a particular corner, someone has to ask, you know, or at a particular bend in the road, like, is something wrong with the road, you know? And when you redesign to make things safe for pedestrians, safer for bicyclists, then you actually do see fewer motor vehicle-related fatalities. And that can be a real strategy for reducing death.
And I should be, again, full disclosure that Bloomberg Philanthropies has also been working to save lives and reduce injuries from traffic crashes. And they've been doing this around the world. Dr. Joshua Sharfstein, thank you so much. Vice Dean for Public Health and Practice and Community Engagement at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He is also Director of the Bloomberg American Health Initiative, also at Johns Hopkins, joining us on the phone in Philadelphia.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, We don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
The new issue of Bloomberg Business Week is out, and this week's issue has at least a bit of good news for readers and listeners. It's the 9th annual Good Business issue, featuring subjects from tackling inequality to saving the planet with more sustainable practices.
Bloomberg Business Week Solutions and Strategy Senior Editor Rebecca Penty oversees the issue. She joins us on the phone from London. Rebecca, I want to get to some of the stories in just a second, especially the cover story. It's close to my heart because I'm a subscriber to Misfits Market. But let's talk a little bit about your thinking behind the issue and how you approached it this year.
Yeah, so I think every year we're looking for uplifting stories to tell about how business can be a force for good in the world, which isn't always something people think about. I mean, oftentimes people think about CEOs just out to make a quick buck, or, you know, thinking about shareholder returns as being the be-all, end-all. And I think this year our issue is landing at a time that's just perfect, because we've got inflation soaring, we've got, you know, job cuts that are starting to trickle through, and we've got some skepticism out there about ESG investing. Mm-hmm. And most recently, you know, whether CEO philanthropists really are all they're cracked up to be. You know, the case of FTX crumbling and Sam Bankman-Fried's effective altruism movement, really becoming tainted. So I think the issue is really timed well in providing readers with some uplifting stories about people, about leaders who actually are doing some really positive work and deserve some attention.
All right. Well, let's talk about one of those leaders, and that is the leader at Misfits Market, and that is the cover story. Tell us about this. I'm not familiar with them, but Tim says he's a pretty active user.
I got to tell you, Rebecca, I was exactly the person you described in this story. We didn't subscribe until lockdown hit. And that's when we know, thanks to the story, Misfits went into overdrive. And I remember getting an email from them saying, hey, you're not the only one. We are overwhelmed. You're on a wait list, but we'll try to get you in.
I think that's when a lot of people started subscribing to online groceries. It was the same for me. You know, May 2020 was when I started as well in London. And this is a really fun story about, you know, a founder who is now 30 years old, son of immigrants from India, and, you know, whose parents taught him the value of not wasting food, about, you know, eating. One of the anecdotes is his parents wouldn't let him throw an apple away until he'd eaten all the flesh around the core. And so he started this Philadelphia-based online grocer in 2018, and, you know, he was stocking oddball-shaped fruits and vegetables, you know, things that were either too big or odd shaped that the grocery stores wouldn't sell, in his living room of his apartment that he shared with his future wife. And it really grew from there. And SoftBank is an investor. They've got, you know, he's got $525 million of venture capital funding, and he's taken this thing national. And that means, you know, a lot of growing pains, a lot of trying to sort out how does he stick to that mission of providing people with organic, you know, produce, trying to keep food out of the trash, with also trying to meet those national needs, sourcing all of the supply and providing customers with things that they want, because people are counting on being able to order what they want when they want. And that doesn't always line up with dealing with food that would otherwise end up in waste.
Rebecca, as we said, this is one of the stories that makes up the cover, if you will, and the cover theme of Good Business. But I do wonder, you know, when you talk about Misfits, you know, there's lots of transparency, and it does look like this is truly, when we think what maybe ESG should be, this is what it kind of, you would think it would look like. Having said that, is the business sustainable? Is it viable? Because it sounds like they're growing like crazy.
I think that's the big question that the story isn't quite able to answer, because they're just in the middle of scaling up. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think some of the risks that we point out is that they're investing a lot. I mean, the capital investment in terms of facilities, technology, people, I mean, even just investing in relationships with all their suppliers. And it's a famously scrappy, difficult space to crack, because if you're going, you know, if you're going into the very urban areas, then it's easy. But if you're going to rural places, I mean, the CEO acknowledges that they're losing money in some of their routes in order to just gain those customers. So it's certainly a risky bet, and we don't have all the information because, of course, they're not going to share everything with us. But I think it's, you know, and I think also it's disclosing that not every single bit of produce is going to be oddball when you're growing that big and when you're trying to meet.
That's what Tim was like. That's what I said. Not all misfits.
That's what I said. I said we rarely get something that looks funny. I mean, oftentimes stuff is small. But speaking of solutions, there's a lot of stuff in need of solutions here. It is the solutions issue. Healthcare is one of those things that needs fixing. John Tozzi has a story in the current issue all about how J.P. Morgan is still trying to fix healthcare even after Haven, which was that thing that it tried with Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway, failed.
Yeah, I think this is fascinating because it's our example of a really massive company that is looking at an issue that's really important for society. Healthcare costs are just ballooning in the U.S. No matter how much employers throw at it, the cost keeps climbing, and a lot of it's structural. I mean, these are issues that are different in different countries, but in the U.S. in particular, you know, I mean, doctors are prescribing medications that cost more money. Insurers are having to pay more for those medications. So what J.P. Morgan is doing is something that others have tried before, including J.P. Morgan previously with Haven. Yeah. But they're trying to really serve their own employees on the ground and prevent issues. So they've got, you know, clinics near their office in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, and they are trying to make sure that their employees are building relationships with those medical professionals so that they will go get seen at the first indication that something is wrong and actually prevent those big issues from happening.
Kind of glad somebody's working on it because I do feel like this is the big nut to crack still when we talk about disruption. It really still has to come in the healthcare space. Really quickly, 30 seconds, Rebecca, fake chocolate? Yes. That seems like a crime. Quickly.
I know. when our reporter who's actually based in Madrid pitched this to me a few months ago, I thought, really? What's the problem with chocolate? And I felt super ignorant when I learned about all the terrible problems with chocolate that I feel like I should have known. But it's, you know, chocolate is, cocoa farming is a huge cause of deforestation and child labor. So there are a few upstarts, and the one that we feature is called Win-Win Food Labs. They're based in London, and they use fermented barley and carob to produce chocolate. And they're using a lot of the same technologies that the vegan food industry uses to take those flavors that chocolate is famous for and tease those out using other ingredients.
Love the issue. I feel like we all need a little good business right now, and you guys give us so much. Rebecca Penty, Solutions and Strategy Senior Editor at Bloomberg Business Week. The Good Business Issue, it is out on newsstands, online, and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This
is The Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just about 17 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to count down the Thursday trade. Equities, as you heard from Charlie, certainly kicking around, if you will. But we are definitely off our worst levels of the session, but we're off our highs. But it's really about the tech trade today. Those big name FANG stocks, many of them are really outperforming today.
Let's get into it with Sameer Samana, Senior Global Market Strategist at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Sameer joining us this afternoon via Zoom from Charlotte, North Carolina. Sameer, it's good to have you back with us. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. So how do you take into account everything that we've seen over the last week or so after we heard from Fed Chair Jay Powell, got a slew of economic data last week? Mike McKee described this week's economic data as a bit boring, but
yeah,
you know,
did.
We can debate that. And you know what we have next week coming from Fed Chair Jay Powell? How is it all laying out for you?
It just still seems a little too Pavlovian. I mean, the market just keeps dusting off the old playbook where it goes right back to, you know, you guys mentioned FANG, you know, non-earning, you know, small cap growth stocks, you know, crypto's having a pretty good day. We just think the regime has changed. Again, it doesn't have to be a major change, but, you know, we do think going forward, cyclicals will do much better. Honestly, we're a little surprised to see oil falling, you know, even on the day when it seems like there's some supply disruptions. And we continue to like that sector quite a bit. So there are pockets of value that, you know, investors can take advantage of to play kind of the environment we see over the next year. But we don't think it's going to be led by those growth stocks.
Interesting. Having said that, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta are all some of your outperformers in today's session. Meta alone, and I know it's been beaten down, but it's up 30% from early November. You've got Amazon up about 15% since early November. Microsoft's up 15% since early November. And these are obviously why you're seeing certainly the NASDAQ 100 outperform today. Are these names or areas that you would bet on? It sounds like no when you say that you're not really into growth.
So we like technology. So if you know, too often it seems like information technology, consumer discretionary, and comm services kind of get lumped together in what I will call the growth trade. We like information technology. We like comm services, parts of comm services. We're neutral there. And the part that we would probably avoid is consumer discretionary, right? That's where you've got a large electronic vehicle maker and you've got a large e-commerce company, which, you know, aren't as consumer-centric as they used to be. Now they're more part of this growth trade. And I think the growth trade as a whole, you know, starts to bifurcate into the more enterprise, you know, specific names kind of on the technology side, the true technology side, whereas the consumer probably struggles in the first part of next year as a moderate recession takes hold. Again, keep in mind that in order to get inflation under control, the Fed probably has to make sure that the consumer doesn't feel all that great in the first part of next year.
Let's talk a little more about that. What do you mean the consumer struggles just a little bit? What data is pointing to that for you?
Sure. So we talked about continuing claims earlier on Bloomberg TV with respect to how those are starting to kind of perk up and get close to levels where they're higher than they were about a year ago. If you look at the Challenger layoffs on your Bloomberg terminal, those are up, I believe, 400%+ over the past year, which tells me that those should eventually start to flow into the claims data. If you look at LEI, that's down quite a bit, consistent with a recession starting in the coming quarters. So all these different things tell us that, you know, again, it's more timing of when, not if there's a recession.
One thing I want to ask you about in the notes that you shared with our producer, Paul, and then obviously with us, is your overlying thinking is it's not a time to broadly buy equity, so not necessarily buy the equity markets. And you point to the SPX resistance, S&P 500, at the 200-day moving average in 4045, and more resistance at the trend line off the January record high in the 4130-4140 area, and not likely to sustainably break. Having said that, we kicked off our broadcast at 2 p.m. Wall Street time with Abigail Doolittle, who follows the markets for us. And she noted the Dow outperformance this year and it being above its 200-day and above its August high, and that it's hard not to make the argument that the S&P is likely to follow. Do you not buy into that?
Well, I think the tricky part there is if you look at what's driving the Dow, really, it's energy, it's healthcare to a certain extent, and then it's some of those tech names that we mentioned. And again, that to us is a pretty defensive playbook for the type of slowdown that we see. So the reason we like those three sectors is we think they'll be durable in the midst of a recession. So in some ways, it's possible that the S&P follows the Dow higher, but I would think the next move probably for both of them is probably to the downside again, because I don't think markets, equity markets more broadly, reflect a recession. You know, we were talking earlier on Bloomberg TV about how the markets, for the most part, you know, seem to be thinking a soft landing is about the really only option every time the Fed kind of talks about, you know, interest rates and the various outcomes. But, you know, Jay Powell and others have been very clear that it's still possible that, you know, a recession is possible next year. And we think it's actually pretty likely.
What do you need to see on the S&P 500 for you to say, OK, now the S&P 500 is broadly reflecting a recession?
Sure. So we've been saying price or time. So either, you know, get us to probably the first or second quarter of next year, because, again, you know, if the market is a leading indicator by about a quarter or two and we think the recession's over by, let's call it late summer of next year, then, you know, again, probably first or second quarter from a timing standpoint makes a lot of sense to us. Or the other option would be, you know, if you get back kind of to these recent lows that we've been at, call it 3,500, 3,600, 3,700. At those levels, we do think there's probably some good risk reward. And what I mean by that is, so our year-end target for next year on the S&P is about 4,400. And so, you know, at those 3,700 lows, you know, and below, you've got almost 20-25% upside to the year-end target range that we have for next year. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's only about 5-10% downside from those levels in terms of an overshoot. So to have kind of 2-3-1 odds as an investor, we think is a pretty good outcome.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Hey, Samir, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today. Samir Samana, Senior Global Market Strategist over at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. That's a subsidiary of Wells Fargo Bank, which really kind of serves the Wells Fargo Wealth and Investment Management clients, joining us via Zoom in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us live on YouTube and now also on Bloomberg Quick Take.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.